Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette on this Friday, January 19th. I'm your reader, Wally Helms. The top story on the front page is reported by John Steppe from Iowa City. Dynamic leader Getz assumes top UI athletics job. Beth Getz is here to stay. Getz, who has served as the University of Iowa's interim athletics director since August 1st, after Gary Barta retired from the role, has been named the university's permanent athletics director, the UI announced Thursday. Beth is a talented and dynamic leader, and the national search we conducted has substantiated that she is the best athletics director for the University of Iowa, UI President Barbara Wilson said in a statement. She has done a remarkable job as interim, and I am confident she will lead our athletics department and student athletes to new levels of achievement both on the field of play and in the classroom. Getz, who signed a 5-year contract, will earn a base salary of $850,000 in addition to up to $175,000 in annual performance incentives and $200,000 per year in deferred compensation. She also will receive either up to 2 university-provided vehicles or a car allowance of $1,500 per month, according to her contract reviewed by the Gazette after a public records request. Her base salary as interim athletics director was $650,000, which was the same as Barta's base salary when he announced his retirement. Getz will oversee a department that sponsors 22 intercollegiate sports with more than 600 total student athletes. The department is projected to bring in about $140.3 million in income this fiscal year. Getz first arrived in Iowa in September 2022 as the deputy athletics director. 11 months later, she assumed the interim role. Getz, already with athletics director experience from stints at Minnesota and Ball State, earned rave reviews during her first 5+ months as Iowa's interim. Every coach is behind her 100%, Lisa Bluter, Iowa's head women's basketball coach, said at the Big Ten's basketball media days before the 2023-24 season. She is an unbelievable team builder. She's a great leader. I just think if we don't hire her, that would be really, really not a smart thing to do. Every active head coach on campus released statements Thursday in support of Getz following the news of her permanent appointment. Head football coach Kirk Ferentz said in a statement he was pleased that Getz has been officially hired as our university's newest director of athletics. She has a vision that is respectful of the traditions of our athletics programs, while embracing opportunities in the rapidly changing college sports landscape, Ferentz said. Beth is highly professional and I believe is well-equipped to navigate this new era of collegiate sports. Men's wrestling coach Tom Brands said the Hawks got the best with Getz as the leader. Beth Getz earned her way into the business by not making it about business, Brands said. She is about the right things. Many of Getz's colleagues from past jobs also have gone out of their way to praise her, including Boston Celtics team president Brad Stevens. I've told everybody that would listen everywhere she's been, and everybody I know, that she's one of the best administrators and leaders I've ever worked with, said Stevens, who worked with her at Butler University in Indiana, in a phone call with the Gazette last year. Getz, 49, is now permanently in charge of a department that has seen unusual longevity at the top position. Barta's tenure at Iowa lasted exactly 17 years, and Bob Boltzpe was at Iowa, first leading the men's athletic department before the men's and women's departments merged in 2000, for 15 years before that. I am truly honored and humbled to lead Iowa's storied athletics program, and I am grateful to President Wilson and the search committee for their confidence in my leadership, Getz said in a statement. The University of Iowa is a world-class institution with a demonstrated commitment to athletics excellence. Getz, whose promotion is effective immediately, but still needs approval from the Iowa Board of Regents, is the only woman to currently serve as athletics director in the Big Ten. She also is the first woman to be athletics director at Iowa since Christine Grant led the then separate women's athletics department from 1973 to 2000. Thursday's announcement concludes an official search process that began late last year. The UI hired Turnkey ZRG to conduct the search and established a 10-person search committee, which included a mix of university and athletics department staff, one current athlete, and major donor P. Sue Beckwith. Nicole Grossland, an associate dean in the UI's College of Engineering and the committee chair, said the search produced an impressive group of candidates. The committee had the opportunity to interview multiple sitting athletic directors from across the country, Grossland said in a statement. Beth emerged as a finalist with a strong vision to lead the department at this crucial time. Turnkey ZRG previously has conducted several other high-profile searches in collegiate athletics, including for the NCAA president, Big 12 commissioner, and ACC commissioner. It is unclear how much the university spent on the search. The UI's contract with Turnkey ZRG, which the Gazette obtained last month via a public records request, noted the search firm will receive a fee that is a percentage of the position's first-year total cash target compensation. The contract, however, did not indicate what that percentage is. The UI has not yet fulfilled a follow-up request for documents that might indicate the percentage. The article is accompanied by two pictures of athletic director Beth Goetz as she appeared at a September 16 Iowa football game versus Western Michigan at Kinnick Stadium, and one where she is speaking at the press conference that was held at Carver Hawkeye Arena on yesterday. And now at the bottom of the front page, we have a story reported by Marissa Payne. Dallas store company buys former Sears store at Lyndale Mall. A Dallas-based investment company, Reserve Development, has bought the former Sears property at Lyndale Mall. The company plans to renovate the building and seek national retailers for the facility, according to a Lyndale news release. Lyndale General Manager Becky Eckley said she cannot comment on the purchase price or the redevelopment plans. "We are excited to work with our new neighbors and witness the ongoing redevelopment," Eckley said in a statement. Sears previously sold the Lyndale store to Seritage SRC Finance, a publicly traded real estate investment trust that it created but does not control. City assessor's records still list that trust as the owner. The property's assessed value is listed at nearly $3.6 million. The approximately 129,000 square foot store at 4600 First Avenue Northeast was the last Sears store in Cedar Rapids and the corridor when it closed in July 2018. The Sears store, which had been in downtown Cedar Rapids, was built as a Lyndale anchor in 1960, along with Yonkers and Killian's, both of which have closed. Von Maur, the other anchor, remains in business. Cohan Retail Investment Group bought the 732,666 square foot Lyndale Mall from Washington Properties in March 2023 for $28.5 million. That deal included the now vacant Hy-Vee food store just west of the mall, but it didn't include the Sears property, then owned by the New York-based Seritage. Reserve's managing partners Jeff Strong and Sean Porter said in a news release they were excited to collaborate with the Lyndale team and join this community. The investment community stated its goal is to always design a property's excellence that maximizes business value for the user, fosters a sense of community, and enhances the physical experience and environment for our tenants, their employees, and customers. The article is accompanied by a couple of pictures of the exterior of the Sears store, one of an entrance and the other of the wall of the building showing the Sears sign. And we have a third article that's along the right side of the front page, and the headline says, 2023 was hot, dry, Iowa State Review says. It's reported by Brittany Miller. With just over 2 feet of precipitation in total, 2023 marked Iowa's third year in a row of drought and its 22nd driest in 150 years of records, according to an Iowa Department of Natural Resources review. It also tied 2016 as the 10th warmest year on record. The state ended the year with only about 27 inches of precipitation, nearly 9 inches less than normal, according to the report issued earlier this month. 8 months of 2023 saw below average precipitation, especially during the growing season when producers reported variable impacts to crops and livestock. Almost the entire state was in some form of drought starting in June. Northwestern Iowa escaped most of the drought conditions in 2023. Southern Iowa was consistently assigned drought watch or drought warning under the Iowa Drought Plan. The worst of the drought conditions, exceptional drought, plagued eastern Iowa during September and October. It covered about 5% of the state at its 2023 peak. The cumulative drought years have left Iowa more than 15 inches short of its regular precipitation, with deficits stretching to nearly 25 inches in some locations. As a result, Iowa's soil moisture has taken a hit. Levels steadily declined throughout the dry summer months, especially in northeastern Iowa. October rains brought some improvement that held through the end of the year. Soil moisture levels will likely stay the same throughout the winter, the Iowa DNR said, when the ground is frozen. While stream flows across the state were elevated earlier in the year, they were generally below normal for most of 2023. In southern Iowa, they reached drought emergency level at several points in the year. It is hoped that the wet start to 2024 will result in improvement in stream flow as the year progresses, the Iowa DNR report said. The state received a bounty of snowfall from two winter storms earlier this month, with some areas in eastern Iowa getting up to 17 inches in a 48-hour span. Last year brought the heat, too. The average statewide temperature in 2023 was 50.6 degrees, 2.2 degrees above normal. December temperatures were well above normal. In northern Iowa, they crept up to 12 degrees warmer than average. That was reported by Brittany J. Miller. She is the energy and environment reporter for the Gazette and a core member of the Report for America, a national service program that places journalists in local newsrooms to report on undercovered issues. And now, looking at the Iowa Today page, page 2, a story by Aaron Jordan of the Gazette. Bankers fined $50,000 for taking customer data from F&M Bank. The Federal Reserve has fined three eastern Iowa bankers for taking confidential information from Farmers and Merchants Savings Bank when they left in 2021 to recruit customers to their new employer, a recent order states. Randy Johnson, Chad Kellogg, and Jeffrey Hines, who now work at Collins Community Credit Union, each agreed to pay $50,000, notify the Fed within 10 days if they start working for a Fed-affiliated institution, and tell new bosses at Fed-affiliated institutions about the Board of Governors' order, according to a news release. Each banker's, quote, misconduct constituted an unsafe or unsound practice and a breach of his fiduciary duties to FMB and caused harm to FMB, unquote, the order states. Johnson worked at F&M from 2006 to 2021 and was executive vice president when he left in March of 2021 to start work at Collins, which is not supervised by the Board of Governors. Kellogg and Hines were both senior vice presidents for commercial banking at FNM, with Kellogg there from 2006 to 2021, and Hines from 2018 to 2021, the order states. A lawsuit filed in Linn County in 2021 alleged five former employees, including Johnson, Kellogg, and Hines, in March 2021, started forwarding corporate email to their personal accounts and downloading emails to drives and devices. Between March 16th and March 23rd, 2021, 10 of 11 employees at Linn County branches of FNM left and started working at Collins, the suit alleged. The lawsuit was permanently dismissed January 3rd of 2023 at FNM's request. A Collins Community Credit Union phone directory assessed Thursday listed Johnson, Kellogg, and Hines as employees there. FNM Bank, based in Manchester, has 7 locations, including branches in Cedar Rapids, Manchester, Anamosa, and Monticello. The Federal Reserve is the central bank of the United States. It works to, quote, promote and the effective operation of the U.S. economy and, more generally, the public interest, unquote. One of the Fed's most prominent roles is setting long-term interest rates. The article is accompanied by a picture of the front entrance of an FNM bank based in Manchester. Actually, this picture says it was this is the Cedar Rapids branch, and the caption also says the bank also has offices in Anamosa and Monticello. So that was the article reported by Aaron Jordan of the Gazette. At the bottom of the Iowa Today page, we have a story reported by Emily Anderson, police investigating threat to Mercy Hospital Clinic. The Iowa City Police are investigating threats made over the phone Thursday to a Mercy Hospital Clinic, which caused the Mercy Hospital System and Regina Catholic Center schools to lock down. The police were informed at 8:43 a.m. Thursday about, quote, an agitated individual making threats over the phone to a specific Mercy Hospital clinic, unquote, according to a police news release. In accordance with hospital protocol, Mercy Hospital locked down its facilities in response to the threat. Regina Schools also locked down, although no threats have been made against the schools specifically. There is a Mercy clinic on the same block as Regina Schools, but the news release did not state whether that was the clinic that was targeted. Another Iowa Today story, reported by Marissa Payne, Common Sense Institute think tank launches Iowa chapter. If you've ever wondered what economic impact Hawkeye women's basketball star Caitlin Clark and the team have had on Iowa, a new think tank will soon have the answer to that. The Common Sense Institute, a nonpartisan think tank, launched its new Iowa branch Thursday at the Cedar Rapids Metro Economic Alliance's annual meeting at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel in downtown Cedar Rapids. It will look to promote and protect the state's economy, studying the Clark question and policy matters affecting Iowa, including tax reform. The Institute will employ research and dynamic modeling to study the potential impact of public policy proposals on jobs and the economy in Iowa. This chapter joins existing counterparts in Colorado and Arizona, as well as a recently established chapter in Oregon. It bills itself as a data-driven entity that cuts through politics and special interests to bridge gaps by arming the public with facts. Kristen Strom, president and chief executive officer of the Common Sense Institute, said a team of economists and policy experts at the Institute will provide facts on the most pressing issues of the day. Its infrastructure of technical expertise will allow the think tank to give citizens a, quote, clear, detailed view of what laws and legislation actually mean in the real world, unquote, Strom said. Strom's name is spelled S-T-R-O-H-M, Strom. The think tank will assess what tax increases or cuts mean for jobs, the state's real GDP, and for citizens' pocketbooks. It will analyze trends on housing and homelessness, tax reform, state and local budgets, and school choice policies, among other policies, Strom said. In Iowa, people tell it like it is, and that's exactly what we do, Strom said. When it comes to the debates that matter, we will give you the facts. The Iowa branch will be governed by a board of directors from around the state with expertise from various industries. Members include Joe Murphy, the Iowa Business Council, and he will serve as the board chair, Gavin Blair, Iowa Association of Realtors, Heidi Levengood, Ruan Transportation Management Systems Incorporated, Amber Mason Lucen, community leader, Doug Newman, Cedar Rapids Metro Economic Alliance, John Sorensen, Iowa Bankers Association. Murphy said in a statement, "We are at a crucial juncture in shaping our economic policies, and informed decisions are key. CSI's rigorous research will be instrumental in guiding these decisions." Paige Thorson, Governor Kim Reynolds' former deputy chief of staff, will serve as the organization's strategic advisor. More information on the Institute and its initiatives is available at its website, commonsenseinstituteia.org. Common Sense Institute IA is all one word, commonsenseinstituteia.org. In states with existing chapters, Strom said the Institute has driven debate on housing, homelessness, crime, and energy. And, for instance, in Colorado last year, when the state legislature tried to pass a tax increase that Strom said was disguised as a tax cut, the Institute created a calculator where people could input their home address and see how much the tax increase would cost them. Reynolds, a Republican, said Iowa policies have captured the nation's attention as one of the most livable and affordable states in the U.S. From the moment that we first spoke in March last year, I knew that this organization, with its commitment to free enterprise and independent modeling, would be a tremendous asset in really starting to assess the impact of not only existing but potential policies, Reynolds said during the launch in Cedar Rapids on Thursday. Because of multiple tax cut bills passed starting in 2018, state income tax brackets and rates were being reduced until most taxpayers would pay 3.9% by 2026. Reynolds recently unveiled a proposal that would further accelerate reductions in the state's income tax to a 3.5% rate for most Iowa workers in 2025. Republicans have argued for more tax cuts because of the state's finances. Iowa's $2.1 billion state general fund budget surplus is projected to grow to $3.1 billion in the next fiscal year. The state has full emergency accounts and another $3.7 billion in the state's taxpayer relief fund. "We've lived within our means, and now we're well positioned to go further," Reynolds said. "Again, I think it is think tanks like CSI that can help model the results of the tax cuts and what that looks like going forward, and what kind of rate or how should we do that as we continue to buy down the income tax rate. It's that kind of modeling that not only will help give us the data, but if it does what we believe it's going to do, it will help us tell our story." There is a picture of Governor Kim Reynolds speaking in July at the 2023 Lincoln Dinner in Des Moines. That story was reported by Marissa Payne of the Gazette. And now we look at the Insight page for the Gazette's editorial. Reynolds shortchanges Regents. Governor Kim Reynolds' budget proposal for the state's three universities is short-sighted, misguided, and denies funding to several promising programs. The Board of Regents sought a $40 million increase in university funding. The governor is proposing $12.3 million. The Gazette's Vanessa Miller dug into Reynolds' budget plan and found a series of puzzling decisions. Reynolds denied $10 million funding for a University of Iowa initiative to address workforce challenges and the growing needs of Iowa's elderly population faced by rural health care providers. She deleted $10 million of funding for an Iowa State University's STEM workforce initiative, intended to support the state's manufacturers and produce workers for in-demand jobs. Reynolds also failed to provide $2.5 million to the University of Northern Iowa for its Educators in Iowa initiative, intended to recruit more students to become teachers. So, in the governor's view, programs addressing a critical lack of health care options in rural areas, a shortage of skilled workers, and the state's ongoing teacher shortage didn't deserve funding. These are some of the most pressing problems facing our state. It makes no sense to deny funding. On top of those wrong-headed decisions, Reynolds axed a $1 million request for expanded mental health services on campuses. Student leaders lobbied the Board of Regents to include the modest proposal in its budget request, but the governor apparently didn't see the need. Increased funding is necessary to better expand counseling services to students, lower wait times to meet with mental health professionals, and broaden options for support to better students' academic and personal needs, student governments argued in a letter to the board in September. But the governor deemed the proposal unnecessary, even as a school shooting in Perry prompted new urgency to stem the tide of violence threatening students. These funding denials fit a disappointing pattern of state house leaders neglecting the needs of state universities. The 2.5 increase in general funding to universities doesn't even keep up with inflation. The result will almost undoubtedly be another round of tuition increases hitting Iowa families. Couple bad budget decisions with culture war shots taken by lawmakers at diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts on campus and at curriculum that makes majority Republicans uncomfortable, it seems the legislature has little interest in supporting the economic engines universities provide. But Reynolds' budget is not the final word. Lawmakers can still direct funding to these initiatives. With billions of dollars held in surplus, we know Iowa can afford it. That's the Gazette's editorial. And we have one community letter submitted by Sharon Poplowski of Cedar Rapids. Laws needed to protect election workers in Iowa. I recently attended a screening of No Time to Fail, a documentary showcasing the dedication of Rhode Island election workers during the 2020 presidential election and the challenges they faced amid the pandemic. I am deeply concerned about the increasing threats and harassment faced by election workers and officials following false attacks on the 2020 election's credibility. Free and fair elections are the bedrock of a healthy democracy. It is distressing to see the rising challenges faced by those dedicated to facilitating the electoral process. 15 states have already passed bipartisan reforms to protect election officials, and 15 more have introduced similar legislation. States such as Colorado and Minnesota have set examples by passing comprehensive protections that detect, prevent, and penalize actors tampering with election systems. Iowa must join these efforts to fortify the safety and integrity of our electoral system. I urge state lawmakers to act on legislation this session before the 2024 election. In addition, I ask that our community support and advocate for legislation that enhances the protection of election officials and fortifies our election infrastructure. No matter your party or policy stance, Our democracy relies on the integrity of these individuals and the systems they manage, making it our collective responsibility to secure their well-being. That was the community letter submitted by Sharon Poplowski of Cedar Rapids. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for this Friday, January 19th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries and our listing of brief other notices from Calmer, Emily Marie Hoffert, H-O-F-F-E-R-T, Emily Marie Hoffert, 81, died Tuesday, January 16, Schmitz Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service. From Cedar Rapids, Bradley D. Glick, 54, died Monday, January 15, Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. From Cedar Rapids, Jackie Spencer, 70, died Wednesday, January 17, Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service. From Hazleton, Leo C. Lodholtz, L-O-D-H-O-L-Z, Leo C. Lodholtz, 65, died Thursday, January 16th, Jameson Schmidt's Funeral Home. From Maquoketa, the Reverend Ivan C. Schroeder, 87, died Wednesday, January 17th, the Carson Celebration of Life Center. From Olwine, Dolores L. Richardson, 72, died Monday, January 15th, Jameson Schmidt's Funeral Home. And from Olwine, Mary J. Toms, T-H-O-M-S, Mary J. Toms, 82, died Thursday, January 18th, Jameson Schmidt's Funeral Home. And that's the listing of our brief funeral notices. Now we turn to our regular obituary notices. From Amana, Harriet May Pickart, 95, passed away on Tuesday, January 16, following a brief illness at Compass Memorial Hospital, Marengo. Mass of Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, January 23, St. Michael's Catholic Church in Norway, Iowa. Interment will be in the Norway Cemetery. Visitation on Monday, January 22nd, 4 to 7 p.m. at St. Michael's Parish Hall. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the family, and condolences can be left at newhousefuneralservice.com. The Brosh Service of Norway is assisting the family of Harriet May Pickart of Amana. From Lisbon, Martin Philip Saylor, 92, passed away on Saturday, January 13th. Military services, 1:30 p.m. Wednesday, January 24th, at the Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services of Mount Vernon. You may share your support and memories with Phil's family on his tribute wall at stuartbaxter.com. That's for Martin Philip Saylor, 92, of Lisbon. From Lisbon, Susan Nost, N-O-S-T, 81, passed away on Wednesday, January 17th. Visitation 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday, January 21st, at Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services, Mount Vernon. The funeral service, 11 a.m. Monday, January 22nd, at the United Methodist Church, Mount Vernon. Burial will follow at the Lisbon Cemetery, and condolences may be left at the Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services, Mount Vernon, for Susan Nost, 81, of Lisbon. And from Iowa City, Lorene S. Frenzen, F-R-E-N-Z-E-N, Lorene S. Frenzen, age 98, longtime resident of the Iowa City area, died Wednesday, January 17th, at Mercy Hospital under the very compassionate care of the staff of Mercy and Iowa City Hospice. Funeral services, 11 a.m. Monday, January 22nd, at St. Mark's United Methodist Church, Iowa City, where there will be a time of visitation from 9 a.m. until services at the church. The burial will follow a reception at the church at Memorial Garden Cemetery. Memorial donations can be made in memory of Lorraine S. Franzen. 2. The Iowa City Hospice or Tecumseh High School Sculpture Garden at Tecumseh, Michigan. 4. Complete obituary. To share a thought or memory or condolence, please visit Gay and see a funeral cremation service at its website for Lorraine S. Franzen of Iowa City. From Cedar Rapids, Katie Jean Hobbs, 43, died on Monday, January 15th, in keeping with Katie's desire to live a simple life. So are her wishes concerning her death, as she will be cremated. There will be a gathering of family and friends on Monday, January 22nd, 3 to 5 p.m., followed immediately with the Celebration of Life service at 5 o'clock at the Fry Funeral Home, Tipton. You are welcome to remember Katie by leaving your comments online at the Fry Funeral Home website. Any donations received will be applied to the cost of her funeral. That's for Katie Jean Hobbs of Cedar Rapids. From Cedar Rapids, Dr. Kent Houston DeYarman of Central Point passed away Thursday, January 11th, at home. There will be a Celebration of Life service held in April honoring the 50th anniversary of his marriage to Laura Lee Inth of 1974. Brumhall on April 13th, 1974. And from Marion, Donna Jane Wharton, 98, passed away Tuesday, January 15th, at St. Luke's Hospital, Cedar Rapids. A private graveside service will be held at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery, Cedar Rapids. The Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Cedar Rapids, is assisting the family of Donna Jane Wharton of Marion. And that concludes the obituaries in today's edition. And now looking at the sports page, we have a girls' basketball notebook report by Jeff Linder. The first item is Mount Vernon's three-year ascent. And now, number one, Mount Vernon climbed to the top spot in the Class 3A girls' basketball rankings Thursday, 2 days after knocking off previous number one Solon, 44-37. "It was a fun game for us," Mustangs coach Nate Sanderson said. "It didn't start out that way." Mount Vernon, now 12-1 overall and 3-0 in the WAMAC Conference East Division, fell behind 12-2 after a quarter before stabilizing. "We fell in the same hole to them in the regional finals last year," Sanderson said. "It was nice to be able to find a way out this time. We hadn't practiced in over a week. Our defense kept us in the game until we got our feet under us." Mount Vernon took control with a 14-0 run in the third quarter, and Sydney Huber hit a pair of free throws, her only points of the game, to ice it with 20 seconds left. Chloe Meester and Courtney Frank scored 12 points apiece, helping the Mustangs solve Solon, now 11-2 and 2-1 in the conference, for the first time since 2019, despite 23 points from University of Iowa signee Callie Levin. The rematch is February 2nd at Mount Vernon. Before that, the Mustangs face challenges against Marion twice, including a home game Saturday, and North Lynn away next Thursday. "We're going through the ringer right now," Sanderson said. "There are no gimmies left on our schedule." A two-time state champion coach at Springville in 2016 and 2017, Sanderson is in his third year at Mount Vernon. In the season before his arrival, the Mustangs were 1-20, then came 12-11, then 16-8, and that regional final loss to Solon. "And now this. The progress has been kind of mind-blowing," Sanderson said. "We haven't arrived to where we want to be yet, but much credit to the kids for helping to get us where we are." Meester and Huber, a pair of juniors, are averaging 14.8 and 13.3 points per game, respectively. Senior Peyton Simpson is at 14.4 points per game and sophomore Frank is dishing 4.1 assists to every turnover. The next item, first game back. Iowa City Liberty's first contest in 25 days was a winner, 48-42, over Linmar on Tuesday at North Liberty. The Lightning, now 4-6 overall and 2-3 in the Mississippi Valley Conference, had not played since December 22nd. They weathered four consecutive weather force postponements. Sophomore Natalie Ramsey and Madeline Casey paced the Bolts with 14 points apiece. And another third item, 1,000 for Fandel. Cedar Rapids Xavier junior Libby Fandel crossed the 1,000 career point threshold in the Saints' win over Waterloo West on Tuesday. A two-time Class 4A first-team All-Stater and a key member of Xavier's state championship team in 2022, Fandel tallied 22 Tuesday, raising her career total to 1,016. The article is accompanied by a black-and-white picture taken by Savannah Blake of the Gazette, and the caption reads, Mount Vernon's Taylor Frank, number 11, hugs teammate Peyton Simpson, 25, after a win over Benton Community on December 5th. Mustangs have earned a number one ranking in Class 3A. And there's a boys' swimming story by reported by Mike Condon. West poised to compete for Mississippi Valley Conference title. Zach Armstrong was part of two boys' swimming state championship teams at Iowa City West. His coaches were Rob Mirzinikowski and Byron Butler. Butler took over the head coaching position in 2016 after Mirzinikowski moved on to St. Ambrose University. Butler stepped away after last season, and Armstrong, who started his coaching career at Cedar Falls, was named his replacement. West has been a solid team in Armstrong's first season. Currently ranked number 9 in the latest power rankings, the Trojans are expected to battle defending champion Linmar in Cedar Falls for the title at Saturday's Mississippi Valley Conference meet. The meet is scheduled for a noon start at the Linmar Aquatics Center. My first year has been great, he said. I've learned a lot about being a head coach, but I'm definitely still learning. My assistants have been super helpful with the transition, and Byron has been a great mentor to me as well. Armstrong's team also is blessed with some solid talent. Junior Hayden Hakes has the best 500-yard freestyle time in the state at 4:40.83, while senior Holden Carter is second in the 100 butterfly at 49.90. Hakes and Carter, along with Winston Fan and Max Gerby, have the top time in the 200 medley relay at 1:34.91. West's success is more than its leaders in the pool. Armstrong had some words of praise for a pair of seniors. Two guys that have stuck out the most would be Rise Long and Dylan Krakow, he said. They are both great leaders in and out of the water. Saturday's meet could match last year's meet for excitement. Linmar won with 326 points. Cedar Falls edged West for second at 286.5-286. It is going to be a fun meet this weekend. Both Linmar and Cedar Falls are great teams that are well coached, Armstrong said. The Lions are ranked number 4, and Cedar Falls is 6th entering the meet. Linmar coach Jan Hoover Grindy also is in his first season, and his team has some strong talent at the top of the lineup, too. Sophomore Hudson Huberg ranks 1st in the 200 freestyle, 2nd in the 100 free, and 3rd in the 550 free. Another sophomore, Parker Moschko, is 3rd in the 100 breaststroke, while senior Luke Kelly is 4th in the 200 free. Linmar is 2nd behind West in the 200 medley relay and is 4th in the 400 free relay. The boys have all responded really well to everything we have been doing in training, Hoover Grindy said. It was an adjustment for some, but the work we have put in and the vision we have brought into this has really shown every day at practice. Their focus on the long-term goal has been unwavering. Hoover Grindy expects Saturday's meet to be hotly contested. He has been impressed with the growth of several of his swimmers throughout the season. I think some guys who have really stepped up this season and made tremendous progress are Owen Searin, Riley Searin, Ethan Crawford, Colin Taylor, and Carter Byers, he said. All of these young men have shown tremendous growth this year, and I think they will continue to contribute more and more to the team in their roles as the championship meets continue on. There is a photograph taken by Cliff Jett, freelance. He is a freelance photographer, I guess. And the caption says, Iowa City West Holden Carter competes in the 100-yard butterfly during last year's MVC meet at the Linmar Aquatic Center in Marion. Carter won the event and will return this Saturday, hoping to help the Trojans dethrone Linmar. And that was the swimming story reported by Mike Condon of the Gazette. And we have a boys basketball notebook reported by Jeff Johnson. MFL Marmax Detmarn notches 500th victory. You accumulate a lot of good memories when you've been a head basketball coach for almost four decades. In Eric Detmarn's case, there are the six state tournament appearances he and his MFL Marmac teams have made, especially the trip in 2012 because his son, Dalton, was on the squad. It was a blessing to be able to coach my son, Detmarn said. Then there was that time in the early 1990s when he and his wife, Andy, hosted legendary college coach Roy Williams for supper. Detmarn was in his 20s, not very far into his career, and Williams was head coach at Kansas and recruiting Rafe LaFrenz. Andy and I lived in a little two-bedroom apartment in Monona, and he came up and ate with us in our apartment on one time, which was absolutely cool, Detmarn said. I think we had ham and baked potatoes. Imagine my wife and myself sitting at a small little table in a little two-bedroom apartment eating supper with Roy Williams. We had to go pick him up in Prairie du Chien at the airport and bring him over. That's something else, right? Just like Detmarn's career, which reached 500 wins Tuesday night when his team beat Postville. He's 500 and 315 in 38 seasons, all at MFL Marmac, the 49th coach in Iowa history to hit that marker. Good kids, good parental support, good support from the administration around you, Detmarn said. You can't have a good program if you don't have people around you and that don't support you and aren't willing to put in the time. I've had some really good kids throughout the years, good assistant coaches throughout the years, parents throughout the years. Detmarn is a Marion native who attended Linmar and graduated from Central City. He was hired for a fourth grade teaching job at MFL right out of college at Upper Iowa with the head high school varsity basketball and baseball positions added. He coached baseball for 16 seasons. I toyed around a little bit with other jobs, interviewed at Center Point Urbana one year, interviewed at Linmar one year, way back in the day, he said. But I think what kept me here is it has been a good place to raise my family. Detmarn said he lost his first eight basketball games at MFL with win number one coming over Garnavillo. That snapped a 44-game losing streak for the school. The six state tournament appearances came in 1993, 1994, 1997, 2012, 2013, and last season. This season's Bulldogs are 9-3 and appearing to hit their stride after a slow start caused by a football season that lasted into mid-November and the Class 1A state playoff finals. And a second item in the notebook, RVC Shootout. The River Valley Conference will hold its second boys basketball shootout Saturday at Maquoketa. The eight-game event features 16 of the league's 17 teams competing in cross-division encounters. It begins at 9:30 a.m. when Anamosa and North Cedar play. Comanche and Durant follow at 11, with Dyerville, Beckman, and Tipton tipping off at 12:30 p.m. Then it's Bellevue and Mid Prairie at 2 p.m., Northeast Goose Lake and West Liberty at 3:30, Cascade and Wilton at 5, and Monticello and Iowa City Regina in the marquee game at 6:30. Maquoketa hosts West Branch in the finale at 7:30. And that's the Iowa Boys Basketball Notebook, reported by Jeff Johnson. And let's go back to the insight page for a guest column by John Bowler, and the headline of his column is Summer EBT Can Be a Bipartisan Win for Kids. The EBT stands for Electronic Benefits Transfers. And John Bowler, for the past 11 years, has served as executive director with the Coralville Community Food Pantry, an anti-hunger organization that provides weekly food assistance to those living in the greater Coralville community. He also serves as a board member with the Iowa Hunger Coalition. John Bowler's column again, Summer EBT Electronic Benefits Transfer Can Be a Bipartisan Win for Kids. It's time we stop making food a partisan issue. Food pantries across the state are busier than ever, breaking records every week. Families are struggling. Food prices continue to soar. Food meal debt is piling up. Those of us working or volunteering with food pantries, churches, and other private nonprofits are doing everything in our power to ensure that our neighbors have access to the food they need and deserve. And yet, despite our best efforts, we are falling short. We're running out of food. We are understaffed and underfunded. Families, children, and older adults are not getting their nutritional needs met by the private sector, especially in rural Iowa. Our public safety net programs such as Summer EBT, which would provide $120 in nutrition benefits to 245,000 Iowa children during the summer, offer vital, irreplaceable support. I am deeply disappointed in Governor Kim Reynolds' baffling decision to opt out of the Summer EBT program. With an annual investment of $2.2 million, remember we have a $2 billion surplus, Iowa would receive $29 million per year from the federal government to fund a program proved to reduce childhood food insecurity, improve access to healthy foods, and provide an economic boost to local communities. I agree with the governor that USDA summer meal sites play an essential role in reducing childhood hunger. However, meal sites are not an adequate substitute for Summer EBT, as they simply do not and cannot reach every child that needs food. The meal site we operate in Coralville serves about 50 kids per day, but we know there are an estimated 800-plus children in our local community that are food insecure. Furthermore, many counties and municipalities in Iowa simply do not have private or public entities with the infrastructure to facilitate meal sites. Reynolds' decision perplexed even some in her own party, as some Republican lawmakers in Iowa have historically voiced support for Summer EBT. Sadly, because of her rogue decision, it is now too late for the state to reverse course on Summer EBT for 2024. As a result, Iowa children and families will miss out on vital food, and increased burden will be placed on food pantries to meet the need. Right now, we have an opportunity to urge legislators from both sides of the aisle to commit to supporting this program in 2025 and beyond. If you agree that food should not be a partisan issue, please visit iowahungercoalition.org, summer-EBT, and consider signing a petition to reinstate Summer EBT in Iowa. While there, you can also learn more about the Iowa Hunger Coalition's policy priorities for 2024, which are focused on addressing the root causes of hunger. With your help, we can secure a no-brainer win for Iowa kids and families. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for this Friday, January 19th. I'm your reader, Wally Helms. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.